5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Everyone, welcome back for another episode of Investing in Real Estate. If you joined us last week during the podcast, you were in for a real treat when we sat down with Tom Wheelwright. He's a CPA from Provision. He is the Rich Dad Advisor. Like I said, he is the guy that Robert Kiyosaki, the author of Rich Dad Poor Dad, would turn to get his taxes done. He is a tax genius. He's been doing it for decades, and we were really geeking out with him in the first episode. Just sort of his general ideas about tax structure, how to incorporate your family, and his overall ideas about the tax code and sort of demystifying some of it for us. In today's episode, we are deep diving real estate. So this is probably what you've all been sticking around for, because we're going to get into the nitty gritty, how to set up your, you know, how to set up your family, your business in real estate investing. If you own multiple properties, maybe in multiple states, you know, holding companies, we're going to get into all of the nitty gritty. Natalie is back, my wife, the CFO of this company and my, and the CFO of our household. Hey, Natalie.
Hey.
And Tom Wheelwright is back for our second episode, where we're going to deep dive real estate investing. Tom, thanks so much for joining us again here on the show.
Hey, it's great to be back. I love geeking out over taxes. This is great stuff.
Well, you certainly maybe are the king geek of taxes and tax code in this country. And obviously, Robert's background in real estate investing and what he writes about, of course, so, you know, as a game changer in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and the benefits of saving on your taxes by owning rental real estate. So just first, your general thoughts about real estate investing and the benefits of investing in real estate and your taxes.
Real estate's a little magic. In fact, when I first met Robert, this is back in 2002, he'd become a client, and I went to a seminar. And he had never seen me speak before. He didn't know I had ever been on stage before. Teaching has been my profession for years. But he was very gutsy. He put me up on stage. He said, "Explain depreciation." I said, "It's magic." And he says, "What do you mean it's magic?" I said, "You get a deduction for something that's going up in value. And not only do you get a deduction for the money you invested, you get a deduction for the money the bank invested." So to me, real estate from a tax standpoint, I've always been in real estate from a tax standpoint. I've not always been a real estate investor, though my parents were real estate investors, but I've always dealt with the tax side of it. And the reason is because it's fascinating to me that you've got this asset that is hopefully growing in value. It's throwing off cash flow. You're paying no tax on your cash flow because of depreciation. And in fact, you're probably creating a tax benefit if you're leveraging your real estate like you should be. You're probably creating a tax benefit because you can probably use that loss if you structure things properly to offset income from your business or from whatever else you're doing that also creates income. So to me, real estate is a little piece of magic.
So I hope everyone was just listening to that and paying attention to what Tom just said, because I think it's so important that with real estate investing, it can, you know, really mitigate your other taxes, your other tax burden. So I, you know, talked to a few app developers this week, software developers who are interested in purchasing real estate, and they were getting swamped with how much money they were paying in taxes. And to them, they couldn't wrap their head around that they could mitigate their overall tax burden by owning real estate.
Right. That's exactly right. I mean, in fact, that's why when Robert talks about real estate, he's not usually talking about real estate by itself. He's normally talking about, this is what you do with your money that you earn in your business, or this is what you, you know, earn as an employee, whatever. You put it into real estate, and that's part of the reason why, is because now you get the tax benefits to offset the income that you earned.
Now, a lot of times you talk to investors and, you know, or you listen to an investment podcast and they talk about an IRA and investing inside of an IRA. And we had done that based on something we had learned from different podcasts. And then in working with your team in the last month, they're like, you know, that's kind of like a tax protected investment inside of a tax protected investment. So, you know, in your book, you say never put one tax shelter inside another. So can you explain to me your theory on investing inside of investment accounts?
Yeah, don't do it. That's my theory.
Okay.
Here's why. Okay, in third grade, we learned that -1 times -1 = +1, right? So when you take a tax shelter, which is real estate, and you put it inside another tax shelter, an IRA, what you end up with is a tax expense. Because real estate, you should never, ever pay tax on your cash flow or your capital gains from real estate, ever. If you do it inside an IRA, you are guaranteeing you're going to pay tax. On top of that, what we just say? We said that the benefit of the tax benefit, a lot of it comes from the money you borrow from the bank. Well, inside an IRA, you're very restricted on what you can borrow from the bank. So if you're not leveraging your investment, let's say you're buying the real estate outright, you're not leveraging it. You're going to retire poor anyway, so that your tax rate is going to be low when you retire. I mean, not our clients, but, you know, many people plan to retire poor. If that's the case, go ahead and do it in your IRA. It's fine. All right. But if you're going to use leverage, if you're going to use debt, then you're going to get so much more leverage outside of an IRA, because inside an IRA, you cannot personally guarantee that loan. You're not allowed to. That's a prohibited transaction. So you can't do that. Whereas outside of an IRA, the bank will lend you money all day long because you're personally guaranteeing it. I mean, I use an example where in the very first year, and I've run these numbers 100 times, Natalie, the very first year, you are better off if you're leveraging, if you're doing maximum leverage, if that's what you want to do and that's how you invest, you are better off after the very first year taking the money out of your IRA, paying the tax and paying the penalty, and having that much less money to invest. Because what happens is, let's say you've got $100,000 in your IRA, and let's say you pay 40% tax and 10% penalty, so you only have $50,000 left, but you can borrow $200,000 on $50,000 if it's outside the IRA, so now you have $250,000 to invest. Whereas if you were inside the IRA, you may have $100,000 still to invest, but you can only borrow $100,000. Okay, so now you can only buy $200,000 worth of property. On top of that, the other thing that people forget is that they think that they have $100,000 in the IRA, but they're not understanding the accounting here. Let's say if your tax rate's 40% and you have $100,000 in your IRA, you may have $100,000 of cash, but you have a $40,000 liability to the government. You cannot use that money until you pay that liability. So they have first dibs on it, right? So you really only have $60,000 to begin with. So the only thing you're giving up, really, when you pull that money out of your IRA to invest in real estate, is the 10% penalty. And it's just not that much money when you look at it that way. Now, if you're not going to leverage, if you're paying cash for your real estate, or let's say that you can't use the losses from it, whatever reason. I mean, there are certain circumstances where it's okay to do it in an IRA. It's just, you know, it's certainly not the rich dad philosophy, certainly not our philosophy, because we would rather make more money than less money. We'd rather retire rich than poor. And all of those things combined, that it's pretty rare that it makes any sense to invest in real estate through an IRA.
Okay. But again, that's if you're going to get a loan for that investment.
Right. Okay, yeah, primarily, right.
Right. Okay. All right. And what about 1031 exchanges? People seem to ask a lot about that.
That's the other side. So if depreciation is the magical deduction, the 1031 exchange is the ultimate magic in real estate, because what it means is that you never have to pay tax on your gain from your real estate. And the way a 1031 exchange works, and that's just the code section, section 1031. It's also called a like-kind exchange. People might hear the term Starker exchange. It's all the same thing. Okay, we'll call it a 1031 exchange. As long as you're exchanging investment or business real estate for other investment or business real estate, and the real estate you buy is more expensive than the real estate you sell, and you use all of the money, all of the cash from the real estate you sell and use it to buy the new real estate, as long as you follow all the rules properly, you don't have to recognize that gain. That is deferred. Now, here's the cool part. It is deferred until you sell it at a gain. Well, so somebody goes, well, yeah, but eventually I'm going to sell it when I retire, right? Well, I'm going, why would you do that? Why would you sell that? Why would you pull the cash out of that real estate by a sale when you can pull the cash out of real estate with a loan? Loans aren't taxable. So what you can do is you can do 1031 exchange. This is what wealthy people do, professional real estate investors. They'll do 1031 exchanges, and then they'll hold that real estate. When they die, that the gain disappears. That's the tax law. The gain disappears. So if you can depreciate all day long, you can take your deductions, you can do your 1031 exchanges, you hold it, you die, the gain goes away. It's like it's washed clean at your death, and then your kids can sell the real estate, pay no tax, and you know, be happy.
Wow.
Whatever they want to do. But it's a pretty cool strategy. I actually call it my Walgreens strategy, because I think that's when you retire, you know, Walgreens is, you know, big box stores are a great real estate investment, because they're like buying a bond, right? A bond that you get depreciation on. So I think it's pretty cool.
So speaking of depreciation, do you think the average real estate investor understands how to take full advantage of depreciation?
No, they don't. That's a really good point, Clayton, because most real estate investors do not understand how depreciation works. In fact, most CPAs don't. And it's a little scary that CPAs don't understand depreciation. What they'll say is, so in order to maximize your depreciation, remember that when you buy real estate, you're buying four things. You're buying the land, you're buying the building, you're buying the contents of the building, and you're buying the improvements to the land. Things like landscaping and carports and outdoor lighting and stuff like that. Well, land, even the IRS realized that doesn't go down, it doesn't wear out. So land doesn't get a depreciation deduction. Building in residential gets a depreciation deduction of about 3.5% a year. But the contents of a building get a depreciation deduction of about 20% a year. Hmm. And land improvements get a deduction of somewhere between 5 and 10% a year. So what that means is that if you're able to segregate out your land improvements and your contents from the purchase from your purchase price, then you get your depreciation a lot faster. That's called a cost segregation. You must hire a professional. It's required by the IRS that you hire a CPA and or engineer. We actually recommend you hire both. Okay, you get somebody. This is what they do for a living, and what they do is they'll accelerate your depreciation significantly. Most CPAs even will tell you that, well, that's aggressive, and in fact, it's the opposite. Okay, you're probably hearing a lot of that in our podcast, is that it's the opposite.
Right.
You know, you think, well, okay, well, we're you know, this is tax avoidance, tax evasion. No, it's not. This is what the law, this is what the Congress wants you to do. The same thing is true with cost segregation. Do you know if you don't do a cost segregation, technically you have an improper method of depreciation? So you're technically supposed to do a cost segregation. And the IRS has an audit manual on how to do it. They have a guide.
And specifically for a cost segregation, if you've just owned like one single family residence or two single family residences, is that something you would do a cost segregation on?
I probably wouldn't. It's probably not the cost segregation is probably not worth the hassle, because there aren't people who really do that for a living at the price point it would take.
Right.
But if you have an apartment building or a commercial building, even a storage facility, I would absolutely do it. And a good cost segregation expert will actually give you a price and the potential tax benefit before they even start. So you should not be out of pocket before you absolutely know what you need.
Today's episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter.com. Are you hiring right now? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Well, with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then, their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job. It's better than anyone else. You know, they're going to find the right person for this particular job. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. So it kind of goes out and searches for them. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within one day. This has been our experience because as our company expands, we need to hire, and we need to hire the right people for the right job. So what's great about this is there's no juggling of emails or calls into your office. You simply screen, and you can rate the individual as well, and then you manage the candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. So find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right. You can do it for free. They're not going to charge you anything if you go to ZipRecruiter.com/investing. So go to ZipRecruiter.com/investing. One more time. Try it for free today. Again, you don't have to pay anything to post a job. That's amazing. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/investing and check them out today. Thanks, ZipRecruiter. How do you find an account that knows all these magic tricks? I mean, it seems like if these accountants are leaving so much money on the table, as we talked about, earlier, where do you turn if you're just getting started in real estate investing and you want somebody who's an expert at this?
Well, I'll give you two ideas. I'll give everybody two ideas. One is, Chapter 23 of Tax-Free Wealth is about how to find a good tax advisor. And the key to a good tax advisor is somebody who not only is well-educated, but also asks the right questions. So in order to ask the right questions, that means they have to know what to ask, but they really have to be mostly interested in you and understand your situation, because everybody's situation is going to be different. So you want an advisor that, and I list, by the way, and at the back of that chapter, it lists the top 10 questions you should ask your a tax advisor when you're interviewing them and the top 10 questions they should ask you. So that would be one thing I'd tell you. The other thing I would say is 866-467-5809. 866-467-5809. That is our office number. And we have clients all over the world. We are totally happy to help if you don't mind doing this by phone, fax, and email.
Awesome. So I want to dive a little bit deeper here with the last few minutes that we have on real estate investing. Natalie, did you have any questions? Obviously, Natalie, for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with this, I mean, manages all of our balance sheets for all of our properties, and as rent comes in and we break things out in different accounts. Let's talk about, I guess, some of the corporate structure. What do you think, Natalie, with LLCs, holding companies? How should people be setting things up for real estate investing?
Well, first of all, they absolutely should protect it. In most states, you're going to use a limited liability company. There are some states that it may be a limited partnership or a limited liability partnership, but for most states, it's going to be a limited liability company. You want to make sure that you are not set up in a corporation. Okay, this is really bad tax advice. Don't set your real estate, and I'm talking about real estate that's being held for investment. In other words, rental real estate. If you're going to fix and flip real estate, that should absolutely go inside an S corporation. Okay, that's how that should be held. But if you're going to invest in real estate, meaning long-term investment, then it should be in an entity that is the best entity is an entity taxed as a partnership. So that would be a limited liability company or a limited partnership that would be taxed as a partnership. All the losses will flow through to your personal return, offset your other income if you're structured properly. There are some restrictions, as you know, about passive investing. What's called a passive real estate investor, they're restricted, but there are ways around that too. So it's just a matter of understanding how the law works and setting it up properly.
And one of the things that you really push in your book is to be as organized as possible. And so if you're going to write off, say, your car expense because it's a business expense, then to have everything documented to the hilt. And that's something that I'm always trying to improve upon and find the best, you know, software solution for that. And I had one, I didn't really like it. So I think I'm going to switch to a different one. But how important is it to just be ready with all of your ducks in a row?
Well, it's not a deduction unless it's documented. Okay. You're not entitled to the deduction unless you have the documentation. And different types of deductions require different documentation. Meals and entertainment, for example, travel require more documentation. And you can imagine why, because people would tend to take advantage of that. And they would tend to cheat on that or push the envelope on that. So that requires more documentation. But just remember that you really do need the IRS. Actually, these days, they require your receipts. So I would have a scanner that you scan receipts into. I'd be writing down the purpose of your meal, the purpose, the business purpose, the expenditure, who you had the meal with. You know, I would be really careful about my documentation. The IRS right now is challenging, if I'm being really nice that way. The current IRS commissioner, he's made it his mission to go after every single taxpayer, whether they properly pay their taxes or not. I'm not a fan. Okay.
Yes.
So the IRS auditors are taking positions that make no sense to me. They are difficult to deal with. This is a whole different world than it was 5 years ago. I'm just going to tell you right now. So, Natalie, what you say about documentation, more important now than ever. I've seen audits where the auditor required a receipt for every single meal, entertainment, and travel expense, every single one. If you didn't have the receipt, even if you had 90% of the receipt, the other 10% would be disallowed.
Holy cow. That's so scary.
Yeah, it's nasty. So this, by the way, this brings up why you have a good tax preparer, not just a good tax advisor. Your tax advisor, tax preparer should be the same. That should be the same company at least, because how you prepare your tax return is going to have a huge impact on whether you're audited and what happens during that audit. So, you know, I would just throw that out to people that, you know, I get people all the time. Can we use you for tax advice and use somebody else for tax preparation? The answer is no. I don't understand why you would do that in the first place. Why would you want your tax preparation to be worse than your tax advice? But I'm just saying that now more than ever, you really have to have really good preparation as well as good advice.
And when we had our strategy call, actually, with ProVision, they said preparing your taxes is like, I don't know, 10% of what we do for you. Like, it's just sort of an afterthought because we've been strategizing year round. And that's really an important distinction is, you know, tax planning is part of your wealth planning. And so, you know, we've been at this all year. And so it's just a matter of like throwing it all into the software by the time tax time comes, because we've already been doing it for so long. It's been a constant pursuit.
It should be that way. And then when we prepare a tax return, we actually are preparing as if you're going to get audited. Now, we have very few audits for our clients, but we prepare it as if you're going to be audited. So we want to make sure, A, we're going to avoid audits at all, you know, in any way we can. So if we can record something and show it on the tax return in such a way that it lessens the chance of audit, we're going to do that as long as it's allowable. And we're going to have really good documentation in our files, because we don't want, I mean, you are responsible for your files, you're responsible for your documentation, but we certainly want to have documentation as well so that should there be an audit, it's fairly easy for us to handle it.
So, you know, for Clayton and I, we'll like sometimes we'll say, let's go to lunch and discuss this next property or this next strategy or whatever. And we make sure that, you know, because it's a lunch with my husband, then it maybe does look a little bit suspicious. So I'll take the receipt and I'll write down the address of the property we discussed and what else, you know, what the specific strategy was, so that we know, like, if the IRS came to us and said, whoa, this Thai food you guys went to, you know, what was that about? Then I have it, and I use Neat Receipts now because it's searchable. But again, I've been searching for the best one. But I can search that and say, okay, on that day, that expense was for this purpose. Is that the right way to do it?
That's awesome. Not only that, yeah, I mean, you realize you're like the ideal client, right? I mean, we would like all of our clients to be just like you.
She's okay, very
good.
Bookish.
So there's not something I've left out.
No, you're paying attention to it. It's really not that difficult. People think, well, wow, this is a lot of work, but it's really not. I mean, for example,
well, with a smartphone, I mean, how hard is it to just scan?
Exactly.
You know? Like today, I took some money out of an ATM because there's one bill that we have on an investment property that they require us to pay cash. It's so dumb. It's this really small municipality. So I have to mail in cash. And I was like, well, I don't know how to document that. So if I go to the ATM and pull out some cash for that, then like, will the IRS really come and say like, what was this cash withdrawal if it's like $200?
Yeah, of course. They'll challenge it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I better have that ATM withdrawal slip with some notes on it.
You better. Exactly.
I want to ask you about capital expenses as we wrap this up here. The idea that when you purchase a house or rental property, that can just mitigate your overall tax burden. This idea that, you know, hear from investors towards the end of the year that my CPA says, oh, I'm going to owe the government, whatever, $40,000. So I'd like to get an investment property for $40,000 and that will mitigate my overall tax burden as a capital expense for my business. Can you talk a little bit about that and why that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I hate spending money to save taxes.
Okay, good.
I just do. I'm going, and what you're talking about is, okay, you're towards the end of the year, you're going, I've got this business and I'm going to go buy a big pickup truck that I'm going to get a big tax deduction on it. And I'm going to do it because I want to reduce my taxes. Well, you know, if our tax rates were more than 100%, that might make sense. But since they're at most 50%, you do that if you're going to buy it anyway. Let's say you're thinking, well, I'm going to buy this truck in January, February. Buy in December. Totally agree. Okay. But if you're going, I'm buying this truck because of the tax benefit, that makes no sense. Because the tax benefit, like I said, at most it's 50%. So why would you do that? You're spending a dollar to save 50 cents. That math doesn't work for me. So instead, you do want to look at, okay, if I'm, and there you go. Let's see, it's an incentive, right? It gets people to do things that the government wants you to do. They want you to buy trucks and SUVs, and they give you a tax benefit for it. And they encourage people to do things, even though sometimes it's not the brightest thing to do. But if you are going to have that capital expenditure, you, of course, you're going to look at, let's make sure I placed it in service, that I'm going to do it before the end of the year because I'd rather have the tax deduction this year instead of next year. Except in those cases where let's say we have a bad year. If we have a bad year, maybe the tax planning is we want to actually postpone our deductions to the next year. And that's why what Natalie, what you're saying about we're looking at your taxes all year round, that is critical because your situation is changing all the time. And every day, every dollar you bring in is taxable or not, and every dollar that you spend is deductible or not. So as long as you're paying attention to it, you're going to keep your taxes down. And we all know that taxes are our number one expense. So we reduce our taxes, we put cash in our pocket.
We'll get you out of here on this, Tom. Final thoughts for real estate investors who are just taking the plunge. Parting words of wisdom, taxes, and real estate for our audience.
Oh, get educated. I mean, I love you've got this podcast. I love it, love it, love it. Because people get into real estate, they don't know what they're doing. Just like they get in the stock market, don't know what they're doing. But the advantage of the stock market is it's really easy to get out of the stock market. It is not easy to get out of the real estate market. So get educated first. Get good advisors. Get good mentors like yourselves. You know, people who've done this, people who've been successful with it. You know, get educated first, and then you know, and then get team members. Robert, he's always saying, investing is a team sport, and nowhere is that more true than in real estate. So I would say make sure that you've got a great team, including your insurance agent, including your banker, including your CPA. I mean, all of these people, your real estate agent, I mean, all of these people are very important to your business of being a real estate investor.
You know, your book, you know, to me, it was a page turner. It was like a summer beach read. I enjoyed it so much. And you were saying at the beginning of this call, you're a good tax nerd. And, you know, one of the things I joke about is the things you get excited about in your 30s and your 40s as you get to be an adult are low interest rates, low tax rates. You know, I never thought it as a 20-something that this would be so exciting to me. But, you know, if you really see what this can do for your family wealth, to me, I think it's just as exciting as I don't know what excited me in my
family. I don't know what can be more exciting. I mean,
I really don't either.
I'm going to have to cut it off now, you two. Our guest has been Tom Wheelwright, the great Tom Wheelwright. Go check out his book Tax Free Wealth. Of course, we will have links to that in our show notes, and everything that Tom has written along with Robert, as well as links to Provision. And of course, what's that phone number once again, Tom?
866-467-5809. 866-467-5809.
If you want to work with Provision and Tom's incredible team, we will have links in the show notes page for that as well. Tom, it's been our real pleasure to have you here on the show. Thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure completely. Thank you.
And that is it for another episode of Investing in Real Estate. We thank you so much for downloading and subscribing. Share it with your friends. If you know anyone that needs help with taxes and wants to learn about real estate investing and wants to take things to the next level, please share this episode with them. And thank you so much for all of your kind 5-star reviews in iTunes. That really helps other people discover the show and helps us bubble up to the top of the iTunes charts where we currently sit. So much love to all of you for making that happen. We'll see you next week and with another episode of Investing in Real Estate. Bye, everyone.